double world record holder, right? So what are the two records you hold?
So one for the Wales Coastal Path, 1,059 miles. I knocked 3 days off the record. I had a 20-minute break, and then I carried on and ran up the Offa's Dyke Path, which is another 177 miles. But I haven't always been who I am today.
Alan Bateson, former addict, now turned world record holding ultra runner.
To be good at endurance, you need to have it endured. I've been sexually abused when I was a 10-year-old boy, and then drugs and alcohol came into it. I was secretly drinking, I was hiding it in the garage. Then it progressed into spirits, rum, gin, whiskey, cocaine, heavily into cocaine. And then at 37, I just was sick to death of it. And I did, I haven't touched the job since. Because I think fitness, it saved my life. So if I can use the experience I've got and the knowledge I've got to help one or two other people, then why wouldn't I?
Welcome to the Rockman Podcast, the podcast for those with a deep desire to test and further their limits and live healthier lives with mental fortitude. Hear inspirational stories and get lessons in resilience from those who have conquered the world's toughest challenges in running, adventure and life. I'm Terry Rosamon, Rockman founder, and today we're exploring the topics of finding purpose in life through challenges, battling and overcoming traumas in life, and building resilience through adversity. If you'd like to stay updated on new podcast episodes and help us grow, be sure to hit the subscribe button below. And if you take any value from this podcast whatsoever, we'd really appreciate your support by spreading the word. You can help us reach more people and keep this podcast going by giving us a thumbs up, leaving us a comment, or sharing with a friend. Thank you. Remember, this podcast is brought to you by Rockman, the ultimate running challenge platform. Test your limits and forge a resilient well-being against monthly challenge series inspired by military's most infamous selection tests and more. Take part at your convenience around your everyday life all year round. There's no fixed schedules, no equipment required, no far-off travel, no extortionate entry fees. All you need is a pair of running shoes and to remember where you live. So if you're feeling trapped in the cycle of comfort, risking the loss of your true potential, Rockman is the answer for you. You can get started right now for free by clicking the link in the show notes below. Joining us today is Alan Bateson, a remarkable individual whose journey encompasses extraordinary feats of endurance, resilience, and triumph. As an ultra runner and race director, he has etched his name into the history books, holding world records for conquering the Wales Coast Path and circumnavigating the entirety of Wales on foot. However, Alan's path to success hasn't been without its obstacles. Having endured the trauma of child abuse and battling with addiction, he emerged from the depths of despair to reclaim his life through the transformative power of challenges. Please welcome the running monk, Alan Bateson.
Okay.
Alan, welcome to the podcast. How are we doing?
Well, pretty good, man. Nice to be here. Nice to see you.
No, it's nice. So you've just finished supporting your, is it girlfriend, wife?
Girlfriend.
So you didn't have a ring at the end of the challenge then for her? No? Or am I going to get you in trouble now? I'm probably, yeah, I've said too much. So you've just finished your supporting your girlfriend. So she's just, what did she do? Is it Offa's Dyke?
Offa's Dyke, 184 miles, just over 30,000 feet and just over 70 hours running with about, I think, just under three hours sleep. She had 1 hour sleep and then she had a sleep of just under 2 hours on the first and second night and then went 26 hours nonstop running to finish it.
Are you kidding me? So like for that, throughout the whole stretch, it was 3 hours sleep?
Yeah, that's what she did.
Jesus Christ, running on fumes or what? How was she?
Good. Surprisingly, she didn't have any issues with nutrition, which obviously in these massive events is quite often a problem. She kept the food going in. I've never seen anyone eat as many bananas in my life. Because obviously we've got a bit of experience of doing this from my own stuff over the last few years, and Katie's done a lot of running. So we bought all the food we thought we were going to need, and most of it's back here. She lived really on primarily bananas, a few sort of Huel, that sort of thing, liquid calories. It all went to plan for her. She just had feet issues. But I mean, that's the thing. Running ultras is fine for 12 to 15 hours. Multi-days, you can manage your feet. 50 milers, 100Ks, you can manage your feet. Once you get to sort of 24, hours plus running. It's hard to manage your feet because they're in the shoes and the socks for so long. And as anyone that's been out running at the minute knows, it's muddy. The ground had dried up quite a bit. She was pretty good in the North Wales area in the mountains, but the further you got to the Mid Wales where we live and down south, seriously muddy and wet, and it just knackers your feet. I wouldn't say she didn't have trench foot, but you know how your foot goes when you're getting towards trench foot, that wet, horrible skin.
Yeah.
Apart from that, though, she's good. I mean, we got back. I'm trying to work out days. It's Thursday, isn't it? So we finished Tuesday morning, drove home. She was back out walking yesterday for a little sort of 20-minute walk with the dogs, and then she's been out for an hour on her own this morning with the dogs. Well, I was lying in bed, I might add, because I was tired.
Oh, you were tired. Yeah, but yeah, you were knackered. It's hard supporting, though. It's hard supporting.
You know, she said to me the last few years, you've got the easy bit running, grooming's really hard, and I just obviously laughed it off. I've got to say, she's probably right. It's easier running. Everyone does everything for you. All you've got to do is, have I eaten? Have I drank? Can I keep moving forward? They're the three questions you've got to ask yourself.
Yeah, it's definitely more simplistic, isn't it?
Yeah, everything falls away. And that's what I love about the ultra running in general is the further you go, the simpler it becomes and the more life just falls away. You know, the kids, the job, the dog, everything just becomes insignificant apart from eat, drink, move. That's what it boils down to. It's survival mode, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And was it nice to sort of give back to
Katie?
Yeah, because she obviously supported you on your endeavours.
Yeah, exactly. And everything I've done the last few years, I always try and reiterate how important Katie is in that. But inevitably, it's always going to be, oh, well done, Alan, for doing this. But it wouldn't have happened without her. Even at running Monk Trail events came about because my name on Instagram, my name, people know me by as the Running Monk. So everything is centred around me. But it's a partnership and probably a 60-40 partnership. She probably does 60% of the work. I'm 40% of the face, the talk, and I design routes for all our events. But when it comes to admin, I mean, I had to get Katie to help me set up this podcast. I don't know how to. I couldn't work out to turn a computer on properly. I didn't never had an email address till I was 40, 41. I've just never entered into that world. And I've got
That's probably a saving grace, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, back in the day when we're all kids and you pick your first email address, it's all always like sexywelshlad69 at hotmail.com. So it's she's probably...
You know about that?
Oh, yeah, that's what I emailed you off. So, Alan, before we dive in, for people who don't know, can you give sort of a little, a quick explanation sort of who you are right now and what do you do?
Okay. So right now I am 45 years old. I am an ultra runner, although I'm currently not running due to an injury, which we'll come to later on. But I'm a running coach. Obviously I put on running events. I'm a personal trainer. I'm in the process of opening my own gym. So I do a lot of mobile PT and strength and conditioning, primarily for ultra running and people that want to get running specific strength. But I've been branching out more in the last year into more all-round training and fitness, which is something I've always done myself. I love the gym work. But, yeah, I'm starting to do more and more of that. Spending more of my life involved in fitness outside running as well as running. Because I think fitness and general fitness health has a massive impact not only on people's physical health, also the mental health, which is my... It saved my life. So if I can maybe... use the experience I've got and the knowledge I've got to help one or two other people. Why wouldn't I?
Yeah, exactly. So
that's where I'm at right now. But I don't want to let go of the fact that I am an ultra runner and I intend to come back quite strong. But I haven't always been who I am today. I've took a long, winding road, to quote the Beatles. Was it the Beatles?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, George Harrison. I was a good runner as a kid. Right the way through to high school, I was a good runner. And then drugs and alcohol came into it. Time spent in young offenders, a lot of arrests, a lot of convictions for drugs, violence, bad temper. Stuff that a lot of young men get up to. I was just got caught. Not that I'm excusing any of my behaviour. I was a selfish prick for a long time. But I've always, as close as I've got to the edge sometimes with alcohol, cocaine, whatever it may have been, there's always something that's just pulled me back from the edge a little bit, whether it be, right, I need to get fit and go back to playing football, or I'm going to get fit and start running again, or I'm going to go to the gym because I miss, you know, the pump, as it's called, from lifting. I've always just about managed to keep myself alive and kicking and from going into a real dark place with addiction. Up until about the age of 35, 36, then it started to get hard work. I was secretly drinking. I was hiding it in the garage. I'd be stopping away from work and nailing a couple of cans before I even got home, and then drink a couple of bottles of wine when I got home. Or then it was progressing to spirits, rum, gin, whiskey, cocaine, heavily into cocaine, smoking weed. And then at 37, I just was sick to death of it. So between 37 and 38, I was in and out of AA meetings. Wasn't really for me. I'm not really into the group thing, but I went and I learned. And then at 38, I just decided that was it. I was married at the time. I've got three kids. And I remember on that Sunday afternoon, which would be the 19th of November, 2017, I remember I had a couple of cans of cider in the fridge and a bottle of wine. And I said, that was it. I was going to finish them and that was it. I was going to wake up Monday and I was just done with it. I was sick of it. And I did. And I haven't touched a drop since. So 20th of November, 2017. And I do something crazy every year to recognise sobriety. Doesn't always work out. I've had some DNFs and some of the challenges I've set myself. But every year, it's another year under the belt and it starts to feel more and more significant. Now I can't imagine going back to that life. And some of those experiences have been an asset in becoming a successful ultra runner in terms of endurance. To be good at endurance, you need to have endured. And that doesn't mean necessarily you've got to have a great experience at running loads of miles. Obviously, I have and I train a lot, but endurance has been something I've been working on since all my life, probably. Since the age of 10.
Well, I'll tell you what, you've missed off your explanation there, is the fact that you're a double world record holder, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, no matter what, so what you've come from and what sort of rising from the ashes like the phoenix, I guess, you've actually come through the other side and now you're a double world record holder as well. So what are the two records you hold?
So one for the Wales Coastal Path, which is 800, well, it's sold as 870 miles and 55,000 feet. I think when that path was opened, I think it's 12 years ago now, technology has improved so much in that time. It is actually about 878 miles. Also, on that path, there's a few diversions now because of climate change and everything else. Cliffs have fallen in. And the elevation, I think, is 93,000 feet.
That's quite a big difference.
Isn't it? And, I mean, I did that last year. I broke that record last year, but you could say it was a watch anomaly if it had happened once. But the year before I tried to do it, and I'd got 580 miles in 14 days and did my ankle badly. But those first 580 miles, I haven't got the figures written down here now, but those first 580 miles were something like 60,000 feet. And then the second year I did it, we clocked it. Those same 580 miles, where we got to with the elevation, and it was exactly the same again. And, you know, and I've got Fenix 6. I've got a decent watch. It's not like I'm using a Casio and guessing it.
Yeah.
And I know there's a few people going for the Coast Path this year, so I'll be curious to see what elevation they get. And also so I got that record, 19 days, 5 hours and 5 minutes. And then I had a 20-minute break, and then I carried on and ran up the Offa's Dyke Path, which is another 177 miles, which again is 180 miles.
Yeah, was that always the plan? Or
yeah, that
did
was
you get to plan. You didn't get to Chepstow and go, oh, fuck it, let's keep going. Yeah.
No. What happened? So in 2021, I ran the Offa's Dyke myself. That was my first major one. And I raised just over 20 grand for a charity called Calm. You know, it's 3 years ago, so I was 42. I've had a couple of suicide attempts myself, unfortunately. One when I was in prison, and one when I was just coming down off drugs. Thank God I'm still here.
Mm.
But I've had a few mates that have killed themselves. I mean, I don't know what sort of age you are, but the further you get into your 30s, the more men seem to commit suicide. So I ran the Offa's Dyke then, raised all that money. The year after, I thought I'd go for the Coast Path and got injured. and I'd raised another $5,000 or something, even though I failed, or whatever you want to call it, 580. So this last year, I thought, well, if I just say I'm doing the coast bath again, people expect a bit more every year. I want them to chuck some coin, because I was doing it. I was open last year about the fact that I'd been sexually abused when I was a 10-year-old boy. I just thought it was time. I'd never had any experience, like I say, of social media or anything like that. And now I've started doing this the last few years, I realised that maybe my story, although to me it's just my life, it's just ordinary, but it seems to resonate with some people and maybe help some other people to make sense of their own life. Maybe to give them the incentive to go out and try and quit drugs or get some counselling or run a 5K, whatever it may be. So I thought, well, I need to tell the whole story. You know, why I was such an angry young man, why I struggle with intimacy, why I struggle with relationships. And there's a backstory there. So I decided to go open with that. Obviously, I had to sit my kids down and talk to them as well, because my boys are old enough to be on social media. That was an awkward one. But I've done it. And so last year, I ran for sexual abuse charities, a local one to me, and then Children's Society, which is nationwide. So I thought, well, what can I do? And then I had the great idea of combining the two runs together, because then it's a full circle of Wales.
Mm.
And there was a record for it. I mean, I knew I had it in me to do the Wales record, because I was well on track for it the year before. And I knew from experience, at the end of that second week, if you can keep going, you go through fatigue 8 to 10 days, and your body starts to think every morning, this guy isn't going to stop, you know. I better adapt. I better just crack on. And everything starts falling into place. And you don't need as many calories because your body becomes fat adapted. And if you can avoid injury, then what could I do in that third week? So yeah. I did. I just went for it. And I just thought, I'm going to put the two together. I'm going to do, it was supposed to be 1,047 miles, but it ended up being 1,059 miles, 126,000 feet. And I did it in 22 days, 12 hours, 29 minutes. I set myself a target when I started doing all the publicity, for want of a better word. I wanted to do it in 22 days, and I thought that was doable. And I'm still a bit disappointed I didn't. But such is life. It's still, I knocked 3 days off the record. But part of me would like to go back and have another go at some point.
Yeah, what would you change? Because, well, I don't know if you know that I actually supported Rhys Jenkins on his record attempt. So he held the record. His record was the one you were aiming to beat, right? So yeah. I was there. I was helping. I was supporting. I saw it firsthand. The sort of how tough it is. He coined a nice phrase for it. He called it Mother's Nature's roller coaster. Mother Nature's roller coaster, because it's just up down, up down. What would you change? You said you wanted to get it under 22 days. What would you change to get that next time?
Well, what I'd like to do next time before that is just do Wales. Just a coast path. Mm-hmm. Just a coast path. I finished on the Friday night. I stopped at Newport because I had a friend, Sue Aubrey from Newport. He offered me his house with a bed, you know, and I'd slept in the van a lot. I'd had a shower for like 4 days or something. I'd been sleeping in the van. I was struggling a bit, so I stopped there with 27 miles to go. That was at 8 o'clock on the Friday night. So even then, if I'd just been finishing, I wouldn't have stopped at 9 on the Friday night. I'd have kept going and finished at, say, 3 in the morning, even walking it. I'd have finished at 3 in the morning, so that would have knocked another, finished at 12:30 on Saturday, whatever that is. I don't know, say another 9 hours off it. So that would have put me 18 days something. But you can't, I mean, we all know what last summer was like. I started on June the 26th, I think. How wet was last summer? It was just unbelievable, wasn't it? Some of the conditions I had, I mean, it's all up on YouTube. Kelp and Fern made videos of it. There's a feature-length film coming out this summer, but they did dailies, like 8-10-minute films every day. And you can see some of the weather I had to deal with. It was just horrendous. So I could say I'm going to go and do it faster, and I could have exactly the same weather again. I mean, the shortest day I had was a horrendous stormy day we had, and I did 31 miles, and I walked 29 and a half miles that day. I could only run a mile and a half, and I was leaning into the wind and the rain and trying to keep upright. I had waterproof trousers on. I'd done the Arc of Attrition in Cornwall in January, in horrendous, you know, cold weather down there in January. I didn't wear waterproof trousers. I wore shorts for the whole 104 miles there. But in Wales, in July, I had cold, wet legs. So in terms of what I'd change, I don't think I'd change an awful lot. I did go into it with an injury, which is frustrating. The injury I'm still not really running with. So what I'd say to anyone that's wanting to do something like this, and Reese himself put me onto this the first time I went to do it. Me and Reese met for coffee. Lovely guy, really helpful. And I, one of my first ultra when I got sober was one of Reese's. And we sort of kept in touch a little bit since, and it's great. He's a good guy. But he said to me about doing a miniature version of what you intended to do with the coast path. So I did something similar the first year. I think the first year, 6 weeks out, I did something like, I can't remember exactly, 10 days of 15 miles consecutively. And that worked, and I was feeling good. So this year, because I was going obviously for what in theory was going to be 22 days of 48 miles on average, I did 16 days of 20 miles. Getting to day 12, my knees were sore, and I never really suffered with knees, so I just thought, I'll be fine. I got to 15 days doing 20 miles, and I knew I had an issue. So I stopped. I didn't do the 16th day. And I'm very lucky I'm sponsored by a physio, Borders Physio, Oswald Street. They're great with me. So I went to see Noel, my physio there. Got tendonitis in my knee. Quadriceps tendonitis, which for those that don't know, your muscles connect to and around and over bones via a tendon. So where your quad muscle comes down here, ties into the kneecap, it was just all inflamed. So he said, just stop. You've got 6 weeks to set off. Do some strength work, which I always do anyway, concentrate on that. So I did a few, like 5 or 10 miles for a couple of weeks. Then I had a couple of weeks of 25, 30 miles, which is not a lot when you've been doing 80 to 90 miles a week. And I went into it, and I was sore, don't get me wrong, but once you've done 3 or 4 days of 50 miles a day, 45, 50 miles a day, everything's sore anyway. My feet were sore, my hips were sore. So I was thinking, my knee's not bad today, but my left knee's sore. Or my ass is tight, or my ankle's sore. So it became insignificant. You wake up every morning and you're sore. And I was doing negative splits most days on 40 to 50 miles a day, negative splits, because the first 15 miles, you just, like the tin man, you're just trying to get moving and get lubricated. But I was finishing strong a lot of the days. The last 15 miles, I was good. I was running well, not every day, obviously, but generally I was good at the end of the day. But I came back, and as my body recovered, it was evident that my right knee wasn't. So I'm not going to go on about that too much, but basically I've got tendinopathy. The tendon's all frayed. I've been under a consultant. We're, 9, 10 months out now. MRIs have showed it's a mess. On the plus side, for all those people that say running will ruin your knees, the MRI showed my knees are perfect, apart from this one tendon issue.
So have that.
Everyone may say, isn't there, listening, that aren't runners, bollocks. Yes, I damaged my tendon, but I did 1,000 miles in 22 days. You know what I mean? I pushed my luck with an injury, but I was so committed. I'd gone out. I talked about the sexual abuse. I'd got a couple of grand in the charity by the time I got injured. I'd done all the publicity. I'd been talking on Radio 4. I'd been talking on local radio. You know, it's been on BBC News. I'd done it. I couldn't back out. To my own detriment, obviously, but, and I have no regrets. My daughter, my 12-year-old daughter, asked me a couple of weeks ago, probably 3 weeks ago, do you regret doing it, Dad? You know, because you're not running. You're not really the running monk anymore, are you? And I was that cut deep from your daughter. Well, I am the running monk, babe, yeah, but no, I don't regret it, because it's a life-changing experience. And I just, yeah. I had the time of my life doing it. I loved it.
I bet you did.
Yeah, I had some low moments, but yeah,
I'm sure you did.
And I'll just do something else. I'm always, it's like, right, I can't do this, so what can I do? I don't hang about and think and feel sorry for myself for long. I think that's pointless. If you can't do this, find something you can do. Excel at something else.
Yeah, it's not necessarily running, is it? It's just the concept of challenging yourself. It doesn't have to be running. It could be any discipline.
I've got a great challenge this year. November the 20th this year, I'll be 7 years sober. So I've got this challenge I'm training for at the minute. So I start at 8 o'clock in the morning, 30 seconds on battle ropes, 30 seconds rest, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off for 12 hours.
What, you're going to do that? Or you
that's
did that?
Doing. That's what I'm training for. I'm up to 2 hours at the minute, and my forearms and my shoulders are killing me. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to train for it. The only breaks will be toilet breaks. It'll be filmed. Obviously, I'm opening my own gym, so it'll be in there. But the thing is about that, you're doing it. You have a go next time you go to a gym. You're 30 seconds. It's okay. Obviously, it's got to be, you're not balls out with it. You've got to try and keep the intensity reasonable. But that 30 seconds, you've got to try and get, like every other 30 seconds, you need 10 to 15 calories, which doesn't sound a lot. But when you work it out for 12 hours, the amount of calories you're going to need, because your heart rate is going to be between 135 and 155 for most of it. So you're burning carbohydrates as well as fat. You're just at the top end of zone two, if you manage it right. You can see I've done my research and I look after it.
You have to tackle it like this, yeah. Don't you? You have to be sort of...
I know my own body. My body is a scientific experiment as far as I'm concerned. So that's what I'm doing this year. But the thing is, there's no time for talking. The thing is, running an ultra. I mean, you could go and do a 50-miler together in 12 hours. We're feeling like shit. I can drag you. You can drag me. We talk. We have a laugh. You stop for aid station for 15 minutes, don't you? There's no time for that. In 12 hours on the ropes, you've got 30 seconds. No time for talking because that 30 seconds goes like that. Bang, get back on them ropes. So it's a mental challenge. Because all the stuff I've done the last few years, yeah, obviously it's broken my body a little bit, but I've never been at the point really where I think my mind is broken. And I want to see how far I can go, how much mental... I'm trying to think of a word that's not bollocks. Torture's bollocks, isn't it? Because torture is what happens to people in war and stuff like that. How much mental anguish or whatever? Test myself. So there's that. But I will be back next year. I'll make sure I'm back next year. I've got 100 miler in April with GB Ultras. I had to defer this year. Mm. So that's the target. Get back for that.
It's funny. You said earlier about to endure, you must have endured.
Correct.
Right. So I was wondering, and you mentioned a lot to do with your personal life and your growing up as you've been speaking. I was wondering if you can maybe dive into that a bit more for me. Sort of how was growing up for you? And sort of, you know, can you pinpoint anything in your life that has sort of contributed to this unrelenting endurance that you seem to have?
For sure, I can pinpoint it. I mean, my growing up was amazing. My mum and dad are great source of support to me still and a great source of pride for me. So I'm 45. They got married. I was born 9.5 months after they got married. So no messing about. Me and my brother were about 16. So yeah, they've been married 46 years, whatever, 47 years. And they're still together. My dad's 70, mum's 65. Brilliant. They were really good growing up. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. My old man's a gamekeeper, so we had loads of woods and whatever to roam in. But we had to walk, run or bike everywhere. And then, unfortunately, between the ages of 10 and 11, there was an ongoing, I don't know how to describe it. Basically, I was sexually abused by a guy. Used to come and watch some of those kids playing football, offered me some work, going gardening, blah, blah. Just the usual thing. Fucking grooming. It happened, you know, I just didn't tell anyone. Usual thing, felt ashamed, it was all my fault. Disgusted with myself. Just the usual thing that, unfortunately, is happening all over the world every day still. So I carried that. And then puberty hit. And I started to get more of an understanding of what sex was and what it meant. And then was really confused about my own feelings. And was it right? Was it just... messed me up for quite a long time. And then someone offered me a drag of a spliff, red wine, you know, all these things that you do at teenage parties. And that was like, this is the answer. Everything stops. All these feelings stop. I don't give a shit. I feel normal. I feel part of a group. So for a long time, there was that wanting to feel normal, if that's a thing. I'm kind of accepted now that I'm never going to feel like that. And I'm happy with that. I don't want to be normal anymore. I'm happy just being me, and I found a way to live that brings me contentment and that I can deal with. I'm not saying it doesn't affect me occasionally, but I'm pretty much at peace with it, to be honest. It happened. I would like to say that I could have some sort of influence on not happening to anybody else ever again, but that's just unrealistic. It's going to happen, isn't it? There are paedophiles all over the flipping world. So you've just got to accept I was one of the unlucky ones.
I had, I've got personal experience in my family as well. A family member has been through similar stuff.
Right.
And they kept it quiet for, well, well into their 30s.
Do you think well it was into their 30s.
What was that, sorry?
Do you think it was for the same reason? Because they felt it was their fault, felt dirty, horrible.
Absolutely. It was. It's because when they told us and they came out, it all made sense because they were troublesome, aggressive, all over the place, you know, throughout their lives. And it sort of all made it made sense then when we were finally told in their 30s that this had happened. It was like that's the reason why. And they had, you know, they had an accident when they were younger, but then later when they was telling us about the story, they were saying it wasn't an accident at all. It was done on purpose, and it was a failed attempt at a suicide. Mm-hmm. And it really, for us listening, it was a big shock. But it, you know, it was very. It's funny how it can sort of eat you up for that long, and mm-hmm. and you keep it to yourself and you battle it, and how it can affect your life, your relationships, how you are with other people. And I'll tell you, fitness saved them as well.
Yeah.
Fitness and sort of giving them a focus. Maybe a feeling of strength as well, or regaining that sort of power and strength within yourself, control.
That's the word, control.
Yeah.
Having some control over your own feelings and your own sense of self. Mm. Not feeling inadequate, not feeling dirty and just minging.
Exactly. And it was when they were a child as well, like yourself, like when you are powerless, you know, and
that's also supposed to be the safe place. They're supposed to be, oh, they're fine because they're grown up. You think it's the kids that are going to give you a hard time, or you know what it's like. You're probably not as old as me, but when you're younger, all kids used to play together, didn't they? Go to the football pitch and it'd be like from 6 to 16 and you just all get stuck in. If someone takes you out, you just get up and get on with it. But you were scared of the older kids. You weren't scared of grown-ups. So that's why it was such a shock to me. It's like, if this is happening with a grown-up, then maybe it's not supposed to happen. It's just...
Yeah, it betrays your trust, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's, you abuse that trust.
For years and years, I just had no trust in anyone or anything, really. I just always put me against the world. And it makes it hard to have relationships with friends, with girlfriends, with anybody. Then it makes it hard to have a relationship with yourself. Yeah, and I was very angry and I got in a lot of fights. And I was very protective over my own brother and sister, over my friends. If I was out and I saw anything what I thought was bullying, or I'd just fly into fights with people I didn't know, protecting people I didn't know, because I just, that feeling of someone taking advantage, I just always made me feel like a 10-year-old boy again. Does that make sense?
It just perfect sense.
Back to how petrified and horrible I felt, and I would just be like that, and would just, God, I got myself into some pickles. But here it is. We're okay. Life goes on.
And you obviously you sort of fell into this the drink and drugs,
yeah,
and stuff. How bad did that get? Sort of what was
Well, at first it wasn't bad. At first it was absolutely fucking brilliant in the 90s, popping pills and drugs. And I had a really good time, to be honest. It's fun while it's fun, isn't it? You know, you go out Friday night, you have a great night. Saturday night, you might have a good night. Sunday, you want to kill yourself. You know, it's horrible. I wouldn't recommend that lifestyle to anyone. Yes, it's great fun at the start. And it's great fun feeling part of a group, feeling accepted. But it's all fake. It's all bullshit. It's not real. If you want to feel part of something, go down to your local park, run. Go and join your local 50K route. Don't even have to run. Just go and support at the end of a marathon and see that camaraderie. That's real. Or go to your local gym. Go and join a fitness class. Those sort of things are more real. But it's very seductive in the early days, the drink and drug scene, because it just takes away all those feelings of inadequacy, of insecurity, and it just makes you feel okay, temporarily. Yeah. But I got busted in a nightclub with 28 pills when I was 19. Got sent to prison for that. or young offenders prison, whatever you want to call it. Spent a year in there. While I was in there, I did some qualifications in gym work. We had a treadmill in there, and a couple of the officers were good runners. Could see that I had ability, I suppose. And look, I look back now, and this is amazing. I mean, it was an open prison. I spent 6 months at an open prison for good behaviour, and I was a good footballer as well. I was playing for the prison football team. We only played home games, obviously. So it's open prison at Thorn Cross in Warrington. So they used to take me out at dinner time, running around Warrington, around the little villages, and would teach me about, because I'd just been a good track runner, 800, 1500, I was fine, but never had any coaching. So then they started teaching me about pacing and about, you know, if we're doing 4 or 5 miles, then you can't run at 800 metre pace. So I came out, young offenders, fit, and with a good knowledge, got my dad while I was in there, bought me a weight set. So I came out, carried on doing weight training, carried on running, got playing football again, had a couple of good years at football. But then, of course, there's a drink culture around football. Because I wasn't taking drugs or smoking, it was fine to have some beer. And I was fine for about 18 months. And then that escalated. And then at the age of 26, I went to see a counsellor. I realised, you know, my weight had ballooned. I wasn't playing football. I was back smoking fags. So I went to see a counsellor about alcohol. I spent 2 years seeing that counsellor one-to-one with a charity that no longer exists because, you know, all the government cuts, etc. Most of those services aren't available. But that guy, outside of my family and my romantic relationships, is the most important relationship I've ever had in my life. There's a guy called Paul. He's probably retired now. I'll probably never know what happened to him. But I was able to open up and talk to him about the abuse when I was a kid for the first time in my life. I was able to talk to him about pretty much everything that had happened to me and that had happened because of me. You know, I'm not just saying everything was my fault. It wasn't all external. I brought a lot of shit on myself by my behaviour, my conduct, etc. But I felt understood, I felt listened to, and I made a little bit of sense out of my life. But not enough sense to stop, because I stopped seeing him at the age of 28, fit. Played in a cup final, scored the winning goal in a cup final, went back to the pub and all the lads are drinking out of the cup. I'm cured now. I've done 2 years counselling. I'll just drink tonight and I'll stop again. And of course, within a month, I was drinking daily again. And then cocaine came into it, weed, just everything. And at this time, I was just a dad as well. So then I had 3 kids in 4.5 years with my ex-wife. And it just escalated. I'd be good for a while, then I wouldn't be. Then I was getting coached by a really good runner in my early 30s and got into fell running scene and had a year or so, no, about 18 months of sobriety. And got right into fell running and was doing good and ran a couple of half marathons, trail halves, and enjoyed it. But then I fell back into it. Finished my first trail half marathon up near Dolgellau and ran, literally it finished at the train station there, ran straight through the finish, ran straight to the bar at the train station, ordered 2 pints of Guinness. And then went back and watched the rest of them finish. I was dying for a drink from about 9 miles in. I overtook about 20 people in the last 4 miles just to get to the bar. Unbelievable, really.
That turbo boost, yeah.
All night sometimes with fell races, drinking like a litre of gin, snorting cocaine until about 5 in the morning. I have an hour or two sleep and then get up and go and do a fell race. Heart rate at 180, 190. It's amazing I'm still here, to be honest. But I convinced myself, because I was drinking and doing all these drugs, because I was still reasonably fit, I was okay. And then when I wasn't fit, I was strong. I could still go to the gym and deadlift 180K and squat 150K because I then ballooned in weight, but I was strong. So I always convinced myself. But in reality, when it came to the nitty-gritty and I sat down on my own, I knew that my life was out of control and I just got fed up with it. That's the truth. People say it's sort of like a Damascene moment, a rock bottom. There may be for some people. For me, I was just sick and tired of wasting my life. And I knew, I always had this feeling that I should be doing something else in my life. And I think, and I'd say this to anyone, if you have a feeling that there's something else you should be doing with your life, then there is. Get after it. Go and find what it is. Go and find something that makes you feel fulfilled. And it isn't going to be sticking lines up your nose and drinking loads of alcohol. It just isn't. It's always a break.
Absolutely not. Do you know what? I've got such a similar story, about, like personal story with you. There is a big drinking culture and there's also a growing drug culture as well in the pubs. I remember when recreational drugs started coming into sort of our drinking lives,
yeah,
was probably when I was about 20, 22. But now you go up the pub and you see 18-year-olds on it, you see 16-year-olds on it, they're all on the recreational drugs and stuff. But I was similar, because I've always been into fitness, yet I was still quite a sociable person. I was getting hammered on the weekends, staying up till 5 a.m., but then playing rugby on a Sunday, and quite often getting man of the match, actually. If I'd stayed up till 6 a.m. or something, you're still like wired or something, get man of the match. But yeah, like you convinced myself that there was no problem because I was, you know, probably still quite a high achiever in a way. You know, I was going to university. I was doing my own freelance company. You know, I was still playing sports. So you convince yourself that, oh, I haven't got a problem. It's fine. Yeah. But it's, again, similar to you, time takes its toll. And after about 7-8 years of living that lifestyle, I'd ballooned in weight as well.
Yeah.
I was obese, unfit, greasy, no prospects of a partner whatsoever because of like who I was.
Yeah.
And I was depressed because of it. And its challenges are what pulled me out of that mess. And it still goes on to this day. So, you know, fast forward 8 years from that point, I've still got people around me sort of telling themselves or convincing themselves that binge drinking culture is what they're living for,
mm-hmm,
when it's not. And I've tried to sort of live this life. I try to inspire people through my actions and sort of tell them, you know, it's not all about that. But they almost don't want to know because it's so integral to who they are and their identity. They don't want to be told they're wrong. You've got to take such a hit to the ego to sort of admit that to yourself.
Yeah, and also I think, I don't know if you were the same, but you just, your life is based around this almost. For me, sounds the same as you. We had this other lifestyle, gym, fitness, running. So there's a bit of something else, but you think, well, what am I going to do if I don't get wrecked? If I don't go to the pub, I won't see them and I won't see them. What will I do for fun? I won't even enjoy a film now. If I can't have a spliff, how am I going to sit and watch a film? How am I going to relax? And it's the fear of the unknown. It's the fear of change, which all humans are scared of to an extent. But actually, when you make that change, I can't imagine anything worse now. Like, you know, I can't imagine finishing a race and wanting to celebrate with a few pints of cider. You like, recovery. I want to go again tomorrow. Right, I need to get my recovery in. It's amazing if you can just make that change, if you can make those steps towards positive change, it just snowballs, doesn't it? And you just look back and think, what the fuck was that all about? Why was I doing that? And then trying to get that across to, you know, to my friends or your friends, if you can get across to 10% of them, you've done well, man, I'd say.
Yeah.
Most people would just be stuck in it.
But I know they're suffering. That's the other thing. I know they're not happy where they are. But like we used to, you can mask that by having a few pints and then you've forgotten about it. Then you have a couple of lines or whatever, you know, whatever you're doing. People don't like it when I say this. Drinking and drugs are fun. They are. It's really bloody good fun. Like, but it's quite a hard battle in that respect then, because they're such a bloody laugh. You need something so much bigger than that, so much more purpose to sort of take your focus away from it. And it's only through doing these things, the giving meaning to yourself through challenges, training, whatever it is, having goals bigger than yourself, that you can sort of make that shift.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened from then? What, you know, you said you gave up with the drink. What was, and the drugs, you just said you'd had enough. What was next? What did you know, right, I'm gonna run around Wales, or was that later down the line?
So next was, so I was 38 in January 2017. I gave up on November the 20th, 2017. So in that 11 months, I'd probably drank 5 months and been sober 7. You know, I was on and off. So all that time, I was getting fitter. I was getting stronger. I was running. I was going to the gym. So 2018, I did Reese's Harem, a 30-miler Reese puts on, just because, you know, again, I had no idea about the internet or email or anything. I was around at a friend's house. She found this one locally. So me, her, and her husband all entered it. Went and did that. Loved it. And just thought, it's not really that far, is it? 30 miles. Entered a 50-miler. Went up and did that. should have won it. I was at the front for ages, but everyone's got these posh watches and whatever. I've just got, I'm looking for signs. I wasn't used to doing these sort of races where you had to navigate or... So I got lost. I ended up doing 54 and a half miles. Came fourth. Nearly quit at 40 miles because I'd been in the lead. Got lost. By the time I got to the aid station, I dropped back to fourth. And I just thought, oh, fuck it. What's the point now? I've ruined it for myself. I may as well just quit and go home. And that was my first proper lesson in ultra running, really. The 30 miler was just fun. I didn't learn anything much. But the 50 miler, learning that you don't quit just because things have gone wrong. And what would I learn? If I'd gone to my first 50 miler and just won from the front, I'd have just thought, this game's easy. I wouldn't learn anything, really. But learning that and then slogging it out for the last, well, it ended up being 15 miles because it's 54 and a half to finish. Getting fourth, driving home from the Lake District on my own the same night. That's a lesson. I live opposite a police station here. And I got out at 10 o'clock at night. I got out in a cart and I couldn't get up. I was Audi A3 really low. So my hip flexors were really tight. And I thought, have you seen that film, Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
I thought, fuck it, I'm just going to have to roll sideways out of the car. So I opened the door, flipped out, and I thought, I hope them coppers come over and breathalyze me. All those times I've drunk under the influence and never been stopped. Come over, you buggers. Anyway, no one came, but I just flipped myself out, dragged myself up, walked in the house. And the next day I was sore and stiff, but I thought, yeah, I was more proud of myself for not quitting when I'd made a nav error and lost my place. And that was it. I just thought, right, what's next? Signed up for 100 miler, but that was 2020 and it just never happened, did it? Because of COVID.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So I just decided to do the Offa's Dyke in 2021. So 2020 was just about training, really. Mm. Obviously, I wasn't working an awful lot because you couldn't see people. Kids were off school, so I was homeschooling. But I have a 50-50 arrangement with my ex-wife. So when you're sober, you have so much extra time because it's a time-consuming habit, sourcing and buying drugs and alcohol and actually doing it. So I got this time. I wasn't working. Kids are with my ex-wife, 50%. So I was going out for I'm just going to do 10 miles today and it would be 20. And then I go out to do 20 and it would be 25. And all of a sudden, and I've got all my weights and whatever here, so even though there was no gyms open, I've always got my own stuff. So I was just getting fitter and stronger. I'm just feeling good with it. And it just escalated from there. So people that say, oh, you know, I can't run. I'd never run a marathon until I was 40. I was 40. Yeah. Marathon, 50K and 50 miler all in the same year. Then I did 100K the year after. Then I did 177 miles. Then I did 580 miles in 14 days. And then I did 1,059 miles in 23 days.
and they say drugs are a slippery slope, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
if you exactly. Sign up for a 5K tomorrow, watch out, because you might be running over 1,000 miles around the coastline of Wales, yeah.
Exactly that. But, I mean, the thing is for me, people say, and another woman who said this, so I did a podcast with a woman called Ali Bailey last year, and she says something really interesting. She's recovered from alcohol problems as well. And people say to her and to me, do you not think you swap one addiction for another? And I said to her, yeah, I kind of agree with that. And she put it a different way, which has stuck with me. She said she hates it when people say that because alcohol addiction or whatever addiction, you don't have to work for, you know, you want to drink, you pick it up, you drink it. There's no work involved in it. To become an ultra runner, you have to work hard, you have to train for it. And also, at the time, I'd just finished the Wales Coast Marathon and I was injured. So she said, right, are you running now? And I was like, no, I'm not running because I'm injured. She said, right, so when you were injured before, did you stop drinking? And I thought that's really cool. If I had sickness and diarrhea or if I was off work with a flu, whatever would happen, I couldn't eat, I could still drink because I was an addict. So I would always drink. Now, no, I don't think I am. I'm not an addict to running because I can't run, so I lift. If I can't lift, I have a rotator cuff that flares up every now and again. So I'll just do some more leg work or I'll just do some core work or I'll just go with the cables. You know what I mean? I'll do what I need to do to look after my body. So I think having an addiction is different to having an obsessive personality. I don't want to steal that from Ali. I got that from her, but it's resonated with me. And that's what I say to other people now. I think that's a great way of explaining it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it is obsessive.
So
whatever I do, man, I like to do to the extreme. That's the truth.
And I suppose my next question then is, do you know why? Like, why are you doing it? What are you getting? What intrinsic value are you getting from doing these incredible feats?
That's an interesting one. And that's probably, we could do an hour on that. Feeling self-worth after years of just feeling insignificant, dirty, horrible, all those things I described earlier. Feeling that I'm doing something not everyone else can do. I like pushing past it. I like being told something is not doable and then doing it. I like the feeling that gives me. Just like to test myself, to be honest. I like being back against the wall. I like feeling under pressure. Like Katie's just done this thing now. My girlfriend's just done the Offers Dyke. And she was struggling in the build-up because she doesn't like the feeling of pressure. I love that shit. But I just love being pushed into a corner and made things to be difficult. Because then that's when I feel, that's when I'm at my best. When things are just drifting or things are easy, just doesn't really work for me. I like to be outnumbered and under pressure. I don't know why. Probably I'm just the way I'm wired, I guess. And I'll never know if all that shit hadn't happened when I was a kid. Because I've often thought this, would I have been the same? Would I have been as driven? Would I have been as motivated? Would I have been an addict? I don't know. Probably. Probably that's just the way I am. Maybe I wouldn't have been as angry, but I don't know. What I do get from it is self-satisfaction. And that, to me, is worth everything. But I'm never fully satisfied. That's the problem. And Katie would say that if she was here. I always want more. Like, I was finishing the Offers Dyke with her the other day, 184 miles in. I hadn't even finished it. We've got a few miles to go, and I'm just, so what are you thinking next? And she's like, I never want to fucking run again.
She's just finished, man.
With me, I mean, I finished Wales, and that's on the way home. That's what I was talking about. I want to go back next year, and I want to try and do the Wales Coast Path faster. As soon as something's done, I'm just, right, that's it, next, go. I just always, I want to move on. I want to do something else. I never feel, I don't know if satisfied is the right word, but that's what I'm going to use. I never feel satisfied. I just want to do something else. I like the hit of doing it. And finishing it is a weird one as well. Like finishing the Coast Path, it's just, well, finishing the Coast Path was, to me, everyone was making a fuss about breaking that record of Reese's. To me, that was insignificant, really, because that was just, it was an aid station. It was the first finish line, as I was calling it, because I got to get there, get some food in. And then because I didn't want anyone disputing the record, rather than get a lift down to Offers Dyke, I ran 2 and a bit miles from where the Coast Path finishes, go over a bridge in Chepstow, run 2.5 miles out to where the Offers Dyke started, touched the stone, got it all filmed, and then set off and ran 180 miles north. That was where the finish was at Prestatyn. Beating Reese's record was just ticking a box. I don't know.
It sounds like
Prestatyn, man, was a weird one because it's just like, oh right, what now?
It sounds you live off the doing, yeah, not exactly the having that. Done. It's the doing. Well, when it's over, you need to get back to doing something, like
exactly,
you know.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to say. Like when it was being filmed, it's all about those days, isn't it? You know, you got 23 days. So day 12 or day 14 or day 19, that's where the action's at.
Mm.
At the end of a day and thinking, right, I've got to try and get 1,000 calories in. I've got to put some arnica oil on my legs. I've got to try and get some sleep, charge my watch, make sure the tracker's charged. You've got to just think, be in that mode of action, 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 and then get up, go again. Got to find somewhere to go to the loo. Got to make sure you've got this, got that. All my water bottle's done. I just love that process of buzz. When it's finished, well, that's that done. I don't like all the fuss that goes with it after.
In that moment, you have a purpose.
Mm, exactly.
You have a aim. Once you've achieved it, there is no aim. You're done.
Yeah, next.
yeah. It's like they talk about that, don't they? There's a lot of recommendations nowadays is to pick targets that aren't achievable or they're not tangible targets, you know? So you're not saying, instead of saying, I want to run a marathon, you're saying, I want to be the fittest and healthiest I can be, because you can never achieve that target. Therefore, it's never ending. And you're just ongoing. You're sort of, you put in little key markers along the way for that sense of achievement, but it's a never ending target.
That's brilliant. And that's what I said to someone this morning. I've just been with a friend this morning to pick up a load of stuff for the gym, bought some weight sets and whatever. And we were like an hour in the van driving up. And I said the exact same thing to him. The thing is with fitness, there is no end, is there? You know, if you're training towards, right, I want to be stronger. I want to, on a bench, 100K or 150K or whatever. And you get to that point, that doesn't mean, oh, I'm finished now. It's right, so maybe you want to then do a shoulder press, or you want to deadlift something, or you might want to change the shape of your chest, or it's just ongoing, isn't it? So I love that. I'm going to quote you on that as well. That's something I'm going to take from this podcast for sure.
Oh, there we are. I'll trademark that. I'll trademark.
Yeah, it's good.
How important do you think challenges are then?
The best version of yourself, basically, aren't you?
Yes, and that's it.
And I love that.
It's called the incentive reward system. So okay. Are you aware of the reward system within our brains for dopamine? You achieve something, you get the dopamine. Yeah, oh, yeah. that reward system is called the incentive reward system. So if you're working towards something that you find deep and meaningful, and you get incredible intrinsic value from, you get just never-ending smashes of dopamine and sort of fulfillment from it without actually achieving a target. It's just doing the work. Remember that one, incentive reward system.
I know all about that one.
What? So how important do you think challenges are then to sort of maintaining a healthy well-being?
For me or for the general public?
For general public and yourself.
I think that's an open-ended one. I think for me, as I'm 45, as I said earlier, and I've done these things the last few years, I think they're less important to me now than they were maybe a couple of 3 years ago, because I have a very strong sense of self now. I finally feel that I'm at the peak of my life, probably, which is a great place to be mentally, physically, not so much, because obviously I'm not running as much as I want, but I feel like this is me. I'm where I need to be. Obviously, there's work to be done always, as we just said, physically and mentally. You know, I've got a lot to do to be a better dad, a better boyfriend, etc. But I think for the general public and for us to become that happy version, best version of ourselves, I think challenging yourself is paramount. Stepping outside your comfort zone. And that doesn't mean necessarily physically. It might be finding a job that makes you feel fulfilled, or trying to be a better wife or husband, or, you know, can I spend an hour a day with my kids rather than just fucking around on my phone? Can I do something more productive that makes me feel proud of who I am? I would say challenges come in many different shapes and sizes, don't they? And you can't just say to the whole world, you need to run a 5K, or you need to run a marathon, or you need to bench press 50K. It's got to be what makes that person tick. So yeah, I would say having a challenge is vital for everyone. But what that challenge is, varies.
It's up to them.
What's your challenge at the minute? What are you working towards? Come on.
I have got a challenge, actually. I think you'll like it. Maybe this could be the one where I actually announce it. This is the podcast where I actually announce it. So I'm doing a November challenge. I haven't done a challenge for over 2 years now. So okay. I'm sort of, but was it called itching, biting at the bit or something? Yeah. So I'm ready for one. And I want to set a world record.
Oh, yeah. Go, go, go.
So I'm planning to do the world record for the world's largest GPS drawing. You're aware of like GPS drawings?
Yeah. So running in a shape.
Yeah. Yeah. Of a cock and balls.
Very November-ish.
Yeah, well, it's for November, and it, you know, the whole reason behind the cock and balls is to get attention.
Yeah,
people are gonna stop scrolling when they see that. And I want to raise as much money. I've got a figure in mind. I want to raise 10 grand for November, this November. So on November the 1st, I'm doing it. It's going to be about 75 miles long. It's which is the longest I've ever run in a single outing.
Where are you doing it?
Yeah,
where are you doing it?
It's going to be up in Brecon. So I had to look somewhere fairly close to do it, just because I live around South Wales.
Yeah.
And it was when looking on Strava, I found a stretch of trails that reminded me of the shaft of a penis. And I was like, that's a perfect spot. And I was able to get a couple of balls in there as well, with the route planner. And we're going for it.
Well, if you need some support or whatever, and I'm around, what day is it? November 1st, is it a weekend?
I think it's a Friday.
Right. Well, if I can help, give me a shout.
It'll be all on the socials. Yeah. I mean, anyone's free to come down and run with me. I'd appreciate the help. Yeah. So do you live far? Yeah, if you could help me around the balls a bit, that'd be lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, you leave your shaft. That's all on you, man.
But yeah, I'll keep you in. So there it is. It's public now. So I'll have to get the webpage up and get the donations.
I'm glad I got that out of you. You've got plenty out of it today, so I'm glad I got one out of you.
So we know what you're doing as well. You're doing the battle ropes, right?
Yeah.
So have you got a date for that?
November the 20th. Because it's my sober birthday, as I call it, November the 20th.
Yeah, and that's 7 years sober, is it?
Yeah, 7 years it'll be.
Well done. Well done. It's big. I recently just I stopped drinking January. I did 109 days. Okay. So I was never like, I'm never drinking again. But I was like, I will drink, but on my bloody terms and when it calls for it. None of this bloody needless every weekend, once in the week as well.
Yeah.
Did 109 days. And do you know what? I had a few beers. It was last weekend, actually, for a friend's party. Didn't enjoy it. Like, didn't enjoy that feeling of being drunk anymore. I think I'm sort of over it, you know?
How old are you?
Sorry?
How old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
39. I'll be 40 in Jan. Yeah, I think it's
40. People said that to me for years, life begins at 40. I believe it. I got sober at 38, or nearly 39. I was 2 months off 39. And it took me a year, obviously, to find my feet, and I got divorced and sorted out custody of my kids and obviously all the financials that go with it. But from 40 on, I speak to a lot of men around that age, and it's like it takes you that long to grow up and find yourself and establish who you are and what you want to do, doesn't it?
Yeah,
saying you need to stop drinking, that's nothing to do with me or anything else, but I think you've answered your own question a bit there. You know, it's not that great, is it?
No, do you know what? I had a few nights out with alcohol-free beers. Okay. And I realized then, I was like, it's not the alcohol that makes a good night. It's really not. I was having just as much fun out on those nights drinking alcohol-free beers than I would have. In fact, the fun, it was a better fun because there was a clarity that came with it. Right. Whereas, when you're drunk, you're sort of a bit all over the place. I remembered everything. Didn't have a hangover the next day. I think it's the future. There seems to be a growing trend, this alcohol-free stuff as well, doesn't it? I see more and more of it.
Unbelievable. I mean, I'm very lucky. Me and Katie have been together nearly 4 years now, and she's not a drinker at all. And she amuses me because, obviously, I am, and I've always been around that. And she'll say something like, oh, I really fancy a beer tonight. And she'll go to the shop, and she'll come back with a beer, and it's alcohol-free. Because, she doesn't want alcohol. She wants a beer.
Mm.
And, she won't even finish it sometimes. Whereas I never, even in pubs, I used to order pints two at a time. Because one
really,
enough. Especially if it was day drinking, I'd always drink Guinness in the day. Because it's not fizzy and I can drink it quicker. And it takes a bit to settle, so it'd be like two Guinnesses at a time. And then as it got later and I was on cider, I'd order one pint at a time or maybe a shot with it. Crazy, crazy life, man.
Yeah. Yeah. You tried the alcohol-free Guinness?
I don't touch anything. I don't touch alcohol-free. I just don't want any triggers. I just don't take any chances. Plus, what's the point? For me, it's just, what's the point? I like getting pissed. I don't like drinking alcohol. I never drank it because I thought it was wonderful, wonderful tasting. I just liked the stillness that came in my mind.
Mm.
Plus, calories, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
A protein shake and a banana instead. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, geez. Like, what's like 5 pints? That's like a 1,000 calories right there.
Do you know how that is? On my watch, that's 2 hours on the battle ropes, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off.
There we are.
Fuck,
that's
five.
The equivalent. Alan, where can people find you if they want to follow you?
Well, on Instagram, I am the Running Monk Shropshire. Then we have Running Monk Trail Events, obviously, as well. That's a separate page. And then I have a Facebook page, Alan's Ultra Running and Fundraising Adventures. It's a group on there. Don't friend request me on Facebook because I have a profile, but I have no friends or followers because I have to have a profile to access that group. But I don't really know how to work it, my own personal one. So I just use the group to help raise money and all my charity stuff. And yeah, that's me.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And quick plug for your trail events as well. So you run trail events, right?
Yeah, we do Running Monk trail events based all around here, Bishop's Castle, which is off of Dyke territory, Shropshire Way. We're right on the Welsh border. So like we've got 50K a week on Saturday. And that will be, it goes in and out of Wales about six times. We're literally right on the border.
So take your passport then,
Shropshire
is it?
In Paris. Take your passport, yeah. Although it's only me, yeah. Fucking, so you'll be all right.
And get your Welsh Euros in as well, yeah.
Get more people come to those events. You know, it's lovely. We have no cut-offs, no dramas. We're just really friendly. Last year on the 50K, we had a 4.5-hour winner and a 12.5-hour at last place. And the person that sent a message the next day to say they'd had the best day was the person that was last. She was out for,
really,
out for a meal with her husband for Sunday lunch and was still buzzing. I love to be able to give people the opportunity to do things that they can't do with always companies. So yeah, come along, take as long as you want, have a good day out. They give the best cuddles as well. The ones that are slowest give the best cuddles at the end. So I just love, you know, to see that joy. You know, like you complete these challenges, to be able to enable other people to have that opportunity is a gift.
We've just spoken for an hour about how they're life changing.
Yeah.
You know, so if we haven't sold it after this, that's an
hour. Exactly that. Exactly that, man.
Alan, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We could have spoke for another hour, I reckon, but I got to cut it short. Thank you very much. I'll be watching you on the socials and stuff, and I can't wait to see you battling out on the ropes.
Cheers, dude. Take care.
Catch you later. Bye.